Hello, friends. Welcome back to the Shanti Ma podcast. This is episode 12. Today, I sit down with Dr. Fergus Connolly. Dr. Fergus Connolly is a coach, teacher, mentor, author, and speaker. He's worked with CEOs and sports teams like the NFL and the San Francisco 49ers, as well as military and special forces units and athletes all around the world. He's one of the world's most experienced experts in elite team performance and human optimization, and is a huge advocate for success and resilience in all of his work, which you guys know that I love. When we sat down to have this conversation, I didn't really know where it was going to go at first. I had read his book, The Happiness Handbook for High Achievers, so I had a bunch of questions prepared from that, as well as his TED Talk on leadership, vulnerability, and sheepdogs. But by the end, there were so many other things I wanted to talk about as well. I feel like the conversation just flew by today. I'm definitely going to have him back on again. Today, we discuss the idea of accepting ourselves even in our failed moments, but not being defined by them. We address the importance of personal responsibility and choosing to develop resilience and mental endurance toward the harshness that often comes with life for all of us. The world can be a tough place as so many things are outside of our control, but there are also many things within our control, which starts with our values and beliefs. We touch on how to get out of our own way and stop identifying as a victim and to shift our awareness onto what we can control. I hope you enjoy the episode, and if you do, please remember to subscribe. A quick shout out to Highbrow Inc. in North Vancouver for sponsoring this episode and for hooking me up with my new eyebrows. I've never been good at painting on my eyebrows at all, so having them tattooed on my face has been truly a piece of cake. If you don't particularly like spending a lot of time on getting ready either, or maybe you don't want to wear makeup at all, then I would highly recommend you gifting yourself some new brows. Check out Highbrow Inc. on Instagram or highbrowinc.com. That's HIBROWINK.com. Hello and welcome, Fergus.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm so excited by this. Like we were just talking, we talked about some of the best parts already.
Sorry, everybody. We promise we have some good stuff coming.
It does get better, yes.
So I thought that it would be a good place to start by having you tell us a little bit about your background and who you are and what you do. Let's start there.
Oh, so I grew up in Ireland, grew up along the border during the Troubles, which was interesting. So it was pretty much, it was not quite a war zone, but it was quite an interesting time to grow up in Ireland. Always loved sport, but never thought that I could have a career in sport. So I thought I would do what my father was, which was a teacher, second level teacher, woodworking, wood shop, construction. So I went off to university. I was, I think, 17, and did my degree. And I thought, you know, I'm young. I don't think I turned 21. So I said I'd stay on, do a master's in manufacturing, and do, end up doing a PhD then computers. But all of the time, I just loved sport, studying, reading. And in my vacation time, then I would travel around the world to learn from coaches. I used to have a little box and I would save money when I would have enough for a flight, and I would email, and that's what I did. I just did like internships with coaches. It was just a pure hobby. And after I finished my PhD, I was teaching for a few years, and I kept traveling around the world. And with one team I visited, shortly afterwards, they called me and said, look, we've changed our staff. We have an opening, like a junior position. Would you be interested? And I thought, well, I'm never going to get this chance again. So I took a career break from teaching, started working in Premier League soccer, and slowly over the next few years just ended up working in rugby, in the NFL, college football. And yeah, ended up changing career completely and working with really just a lot of high performers in sport and in military. And all along, I just, when I look back, and I was just fascinated by how do you help people, you know, perform at a high level? And that's really it. It's probably only in the last few years I realized that has been what everything studying, learning has been about. I'm just fascinated by people and groups of people and teams. How do you get them to perform at a high level? And that's brought me here so far, 43. And yeah, it's just been a long, fascinating journey. And people often ask me, did you have a plan? I had no plan. No plan. Just followed my passion.
Oh, that's actually such a good place to live from. More of us need to do that. I also love people. That's why I started a podcast.
You mentioned that. You mentioned that when we were talking earlier. I thought, yeah, and if you're going to study anything, people are what, you know, everything comes back to people. And people talk about the importance of technology and all of that. Yes, but it still revolves around people and how we make decisions and how we perform and relationships and everything. So, yeah, just always been fascinated by people, why we do things, how we do things, how we work together, all of that.
Okay. And so then I guess that would be considered as human performance or human optimization. I know a lot of people talk about that now, but what's under the category of human performance and human optimization?
Yeah, I love the term optimization because when I was working and studying manufacturing, everything was based around this term optimization. I loved it because over in recent years, we've looked at maximizing everything. How can we do more of? How can we do, as much as possible? But when you looked coming from manufacturing or coming from industry, the goal is how do we do the best job possible with the least amount of resources? And when you look at humans, you're not trying to be the best at everything. You can't maximize everything in your life. You want to optimize it. So you want to identify, first of all, what your goal is. And I always start with people, what's your definition of success? Because it changes for everybody. Everybody has different definitions.
Totally.
And then how do we optimize that? Because you can't be the best at everything. So what's important to you? What's your definition of success? And, we get fed on social media and so many different routes or arenas, what other people determine as success. But what's important to you? Because I think that's really, really important. That's a really important place to start with.
Yeah, actually, I'm just going to my footnotes here because I had written something down because I feel like social media is really changing the way that we view ourselves in the world. And obviously I have a huge, part myself on social media a lot more than I want to be, but so it's got some positive effects as well, in how we can connect with one another and you can use it in a meaningful way. But I also feel like something you had said in reading your book was, about the glorification of, money, power, cars, clothes, sex, and how that is really watering down people's values. And I quoted you. How does that feel?
Thank you.
I quoted you.
I feel special.
Okay. Well, I was going to say, listen up, I'll read it.
Okay.
People who identify with a social media personality can adopt their tendencies and that becomes their purpose. And those who are confused about their identity and purpose are the most susceptible to misdirection and disillusionment through cult and other organizations. I just thought that was a really interesting thing to say because that's something that I have seen a lot of. And so I kind of wanted to talk about social media and how much that's influencing the way that people are defining what's important and just values in general.
So one of the things that was, the way in life you've got moments that stand out to you. And I remember I was in a locker room with a professional team and it was eye-opening to me. Some of these guys were icons on social media or on just in media in general. And when you get behind the hood or behind the curtain and you see what they're really like, you realize the public image is so different from who they are. And it made me realize that these people, some of them who are icons and heroes and role models, are actually not really what you would want as a role model icon. And so that's something that stayed with me. And for me, I talk to people about image and identity. And I'm sure we'll talk about, you know, authenticity and the importance of it. I think what often happens are that we have this public image and then we have our own identity. And I think one of the challenges for young children growing up now is that they just see the image of someone, but they don't really know who the person is. Now, then they portray and project an image on social media, but they perhaps have not truly understood who they are. Mm-hmm. The other thing that happens, people who become quite famous or popular, is that they've got this social media image that now that they've spent a lot of time generating and cultivating, now they have to live up to that. And the wider that gap grows, the more difficult it is for them. And they struggle sometimes with it, or if they can't live up to it, or if it's a perfect image. And so I think it creates a lot of challenges and interesting situations. You made a great point. Like, social media is wonderful. We wouldn't be able to do this without social media and technology. So there's a lot of benefits. Nothing's truly negative. It's how you use it. But I think there are some caveats and some, you know, gentle warnings that either parents or even adults we need to be aware of, because you can get distracted by your own image.
Oh, that's 100%. I believe that could be called narcissism.
Absolutely.
And there's definitely a lot of narcissistic sort of. Just as I'm saying this, I'm like, I can see your brain moving. Because every time I attempt to take a selfie, and you know, if you take selfies and that's your thing, I am not judging you. But for myself, when I take a selfie, there's something so awkward about it, because it's so disingenuous. It's not authentic. It's like, I probably would not make my face like this ever. And if I was sitting here talking to you and I started making my face, like, you'd be like, what are you doing? But, you know, anyways, that's just my comment about that.
Yeah, but I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing, so long as you know who you truly are. I think that the danger is when you start to live up to or you create a perfect image and a perfect life, and then and you get confused. I see a lot of people who tend to struggle with that they feel that they have to live up to that. And I think one of the things that I often talk about, you know, years ago when you were growing up in your neighborhood or whatever, social media wasn't as big an influence. So you saw your neighbors and you saw the people locally, and you knew them better than you know your neighbors now, but you knew their strengths and weaknesses and their faults. So nobody was perfect. In modern day, so many people live almost exclusively on social media, where everything is being portrayed as almost perfect. And I think it's an interesting challenge for children growing up today. I'm a little bit older.
Oh, I know. I was going to say, I'm also glad that I didn't have social media until I remember getting all these invites for Facebook. I was like, what is this Facebook? And it was like 2007. So, I mean, I was almost, I don't know, I was like 18 or something by the time I finally had, you know, Facebook or whatever. But I know the pressures that kids are having to face nowadays, and like all these filters too, you know, like I'm talking about selfies. It's so funny because just recently, I've been doing this thing where I'm like, if I'm going to try to take like a selfie, or sometimes I don't even end up taking one, cause I'm like, I'm just being weird. But anyways, I will flip from the, like where it's like the filter that makes my eyes look bigger and my face look perfect. And I'll just flip back to the regular one. And I'm just like, okay, just reality checking myself here.
Yes.
But, yeah, I mean, that is a huge part of, I feel like a lot of the pressures that people are facing, because you go online and sometimes you're flipping through and people's lives just seem so, you know, perfect and tidy. And I think that's why I've taken an approach with my, my platform personally, because I am a very open person, probably too open, but anyways, I'm just a very open person. And so I'm like, okay, if I don't ever portray to have it all figured out or like I'm some guru, no one will ever be waiting or sitting back and like waiting for me to make a mistake. Like if I already just say I'm not perfect and I'm a very flawed person, then I don't have to feel like I need to project this image of I have it all figured out, because my God, I have some things figured out, but there's so many things that I'm in the process of still learning myself. So I think being honest and humble about your own struggles without going full Brené Brown vulnerable about airing all of your I'm just making a joke.
But that's so powerful. Like, you mean, because like you said, you haven't created this expectation, and it's self-created. Like you said, you haven't created this expectation that you have all the answers. You're trying to work things out. You're trying to figure things out. We all are, we all will be. There's some things that you think you have a handle on. And I think the other thing that's particularly important is even the things that we think we have figured out or we have a model for, we have to be ready to change them if something better comes along.
Oh, I agree with that 100%.
Yeah. So no, that's very, very accurate.
Well, and you know, I was going to say, we had kind of been talking about this before we started recording, but about vulnerability. I did want to come back to that because I think that we've kind of gotten into this place. This is one more thing in relation to social media I wanted to add, where we have people that really want to connect, but people are sharing so many personal, intimate details of their life on social media. And the thing with that is, you know, maybe that will help some people, but then for other people, it's also like putting you out there and you might end up now being, you know, attacked for certain things or shamed for certain things. So like, how do people strike a balance, especially in this world of who I can share and be vulnerable with, but setting boundaries on limits on who you don't share those things with, which maybe would be a good opportunity to come to your concept of like the concentric circle and tie it into that.
Yeah. So this was something I spent quite some time thinking about, because if you just take the world itself, the world is not a safe place necessarily. You know, you've got good people, you've got bad people, and you need to be able to navigate that. And so, you know, the model that, you know, that I use, or that I guess I had to learn, was that there are people in your life that you should be vulnerable with. You need to, those who love and care for you and that you care for. But outside of that, people who you don't know, being vulnerable is very, very risky. Not everybody has your best interests at heart, but at the same time, that doesn't mean that you can't be vulnerable. You need to share. There are times in your life when you need to share with certain people. And that doesn't mean it's just family. Sometimes it can be work colleagues who are in that circle. It's not just family and professional, but knowing who they are and then choosing who you want to be vulnerable with. Because some people, like you said, who are very open and very express and share their vulnerabilities, very often can be exploited. Like, forget, you know, even like you said, they can be attacked. But if you share everything with people who don't have your best interests at heart, mm-hmm. they're going to exploit that. And it's knowing the difference. And that's where, for me, you know, I think there's a big difference between authenticity and vulnerability. Authenticity is being honest and acknowledging there are things that you're not necessarily good at. Mm-hmm. Being vulnerable is sharing it's literally opening up your weaknesses and sharing them with someone, knowing that they can be used against you. You can't do that with everybody, not in today's world. You only have to look at the news today to know that the world is not necessarily a safe place mm-hmm. All of the time. And that's a very, very important point, I think, particularly for young people. I think people growing up, I think it's important to be able to recognize that.
Mm-hmm. So then, like, for choosing your circle, because, and I love that you quoted Jim Rohn. I love Jim Rohn. Mm-hmm. He's so great. And about the five people you spend the most time with is who you become the most alike. And I definitely, you know, I relate to that, because if you spend a certain amount of time with certain people, you'll start sharing similar mannerisms or talking a certain way. I have one girlfriend and she's very bubbly. She's one of my actor friends, and I have no idea what it is, but every time, and I wouldn't talk like this with anyone else, but when I'm with Sarah, it's like, oh my God. Like, and it's like adding like, you know, like an extra amount of enthusiasm. And I don't know, I think it's just our energy together, but you know, you start talking like certain people, or if you spend a lot of time with somebody else and maybe they have like a very pessimistic outlook on life, you can start to think in similar ways as well. So what would be your advice for people and how to be selective about who you allow into your inner circle? Who do you kind of separate as more like acquaintances, and like what that would look like?
That's really interesting, because it kind of ties in with, you know, the idea of empathy and sympathy. Mm. And I think it's very important. Like, so for example, when you're with someone and you want to resonate and connect with them, you will adopt some of their mannerisms, sometimes unintentionally. And you're empathizing with someone. In other words, you're recognizing their feelings, their emotions. And that's important. And it's an important quality to recognize and to be able to develop. Because if you can't empathize and understand where someone is, you're going to struggle to communicate. You're going to struggle to help them. Mm-hmm. Sympathy is where you recognize, but you start to share their feelings. And sometimes that can be dangerous, because now I use the analogy of, if you're walking past a lake and you see someone in the water and they're struggling, mm-hmm. Some people just ignore them, not interested. Some people are very sympathetic and they just jump in. Now that you've got two people in the water, both of them are going to be in trouble most likely. Mm-hmm. Empathy is where you see someone in struggle and you help them get out, but without putting yourself at risk. Mm-hmm. And it's important to be able to recognize the difference between that. But I think that those people who have empathy, who can connect with and understand other people's feelings, are in a far better position to help someone while protecting themselves. And we spoke about this earlier as well. You know, you want to help people, you want to help them, but you have to be careful that you don't put yourself at risk. Mm-hmm. And you don't drain yourself. But when it comes to choosing people in your circle, it's really about those people who are being honest with you first and who you share feelings for, and then you can choose to be vulnerable with them and likewise. Mm-hmm. But I don't believe that you can be vulnerable with someone until you're honest and authentic with them.
Right.
Like, you can't jump to that stage.
Yeah, you know, and another thing that I want to add to that too is that, you know, how do you feel when you're around someone? Like, how do you feel after leaving that person? Did they, you know, do you elevate one another, or do you leave feeling really drained? You know, we all have family Yes. members like that, but you can't pick your family, but you can choose your friends. So it's interesting, because I think that there's also a fine balance of like, because I think it comes to boundaries too. You can have limits on what you will allow in and how much you can give to a person. If someone is chronically negative, you're very drained, then that might be someone that you can't spend as much time with. But for somebody who is perhaps maybe going through a hard time, you know, obviously you want to be able to support. But at the same time, I think it's so important, and I think for people pleasers, we often feel like we need to show up every single time and give and give and give, but we have a certain amount of reserve of energy. And if you keep giving, you go into a deficit. And if you don't like take a pause and then go do some things to take care of yourself, instead of being able to help this person, you can actually end up resenting that person. And it's not, you know, people will say, oh, energy vampire. Yes, but also, are you just like giving and giving and giving more than
yes.
You know, it's a two-way street. So you have to know when you need to take care of yourself and set limits on, okay, I can only listen to my sister complain for 10 minutes or 15 minutes or whatever, once a week or once a month, whatever that is. But
no, and the other side of that as well is, you know, and I know this personally, you're not helping someone all of the time by sympathizing with them. Like if somebody is struggling a little bit and you end up sympathizing with them, you're not necessarily helping them, because now they start to rely on you. So if you reframe it sometimes as, you know, by actually being empathetic, but not sympathizing so much and not being there all of the time, I'm actually helping them because they're going to grow out of it. Because you're not actually giving them the tools to help themselves, which was the other thing that we were talking about earlier, was, you know, you want to help people develop the tools and skill sets to overcome this particular problem so they can do it in the future, because they can't always come to you to help them. So the danger of being overly sympathetic is, and excessively sympathetic is, you're not helping the other person at all. They're not becoming resilient and they're not learning the skill sets they need.
Totally. And you know, that's the thing, like often, I mean, I think we can all at times fall into the habit of like, oh, you know, like let's vent about our problems. But you know, where you're venting together about things, and girls, I know you know what I'm talking about, but that is something that, you know, we can do, and it is not helpful. And then the other part of that too is, I feel like when, for me, I know what it's like to struggle. And so I like to be able to offer someone tools. And like, I have had a journey, to say the least, trying to figure out and develop my own tool belt to figure out, you know, how to navigate the difficulties of life. Because like you said earlier, life is not easy. It is, like, you know, it's not realistic to think that if I can just get past this one horrible thing, life is all rainbows after that. I think we should just buckle down and prepare to weather the many storms that come with life. But with that, if you develop tools to navigate it, overall, you don't have so many peaks and valleys. You can kind of like figure out a better way to get through it. But because I know what that's like, I really do like to help encourage other people that they can access and figure that out for themselves too. Here's what worked for me. But I really want to say, for anyone who's listening, if you are a people pleaser and you really try to give and give and give, and you're trying to give suggestions to someone who is not receptive, you are wasting so much time and energy, because you have to want to change, and a person has to be open and wanting to change for them to, you know, actually even be able to hear what you're saying. So, yeah.
No, I'm going to steal the tool. Like, I used to use almost the same analogy. Like, you need to develop your toolbox. Tool belt sounds better. But that's exactly it. You want to have those tools and to know what they are. And I think the most critical skill is to have the awareness, and the awareness of the effect of other people. The, like you said, do they either drain energy, give you energy? How do you feel? The other thing that's, it's interesting, you're asking, you know, how to recognize people. I think having that awareness and knowing people and knowing how they affect you, and taking the time to be aware of that is very important. And that's the other thing that's, so with this whole COVID thing going on, I think people all of a sudden had a lot more time with themselves. So that, you know, normally you get up in the morning, you're rushing into the office, long day of work, rushing home, either going, spending time with family or whatever you're doing. Now, all of a sudden you had a lot of more time to reflect. And I think that's a better thing for people. I know there's issues with isolation, but using that time to reflect on how people impact you, do they give you energy, how you feel, I think that's one of the possible benefits of this time. Try to be optimistic.
Yeah, no, totally. And it's interesting that I kind of, for the first, I think probably the first 2 months, I felt very stir crazy. It was just this like buzz of energy, where I felt like I just had, it was just like, I could not settle and ground my energy. And then, you know, I started hearing that was going on for a lot of people. And now I guess we'll fast forward to, however many months later, and so many people have gone through this, like, I went down the rabbit hole and I went to the deep depths of my darkness and holy crap, like some ugly stuff in there. And now I've come out the other side and I think I'm cool with some of these things. I've learned some lessons. And I like that because, you know, what other, obviously it's not great circumstances, but what other time have we been given where we're all on house arrest, pretty much, where you have all this time.
But think about it, when you think about it, like the irony of it is that you have to spend time with the scariest person in the world, yourself. Like and so many people were struggling with that. And when you think about it, it shouldn't be like that. So people had to spend time and they were maybe in their apartment, in their house, and they were looking at, they were looking at how they were, you know, moving through the world and, you know, how they were managing having to work from home. And I think it showed up for a lot of people, things that were important, maybe things that weren't. Some people, for example, were able to do better work from home. Some people really found that they needed to be around groups. They needed to be around other people. Some relationships became more valuable. Others, they realized, you know what, I'm not missing the office so much. I'm not missing this group of people. So I think there have been a lot of opportunities for people to reflect on how, you know, people, absence of people, how it's reflected on them, and who did you call the most? Who did you develop those relationships with over that period of time?
Yeah, that's true, because a lot of people were doing video calls and, you know, that helped me a lot. And I'm glad that I did, because it was funny when I finally got out into some social settings, I was like, I've never had social anxiety. And I was like, man, I am so awkward. I felt like I was, like I had been a, you know, golden retriever left at home all day and I was finally out for my walk. And I was just so excited to be with all the other dogs, just like couldn't handle it. That's a funny analogy, but yeah, it was interesting because a lot of people I find were, you know, struggling, especially if they lived alone, to be with yourself so much. And then there was a while there where people were going online and wow, was that a toxic wasteland? And so you're yes. at home, you need some connection, and now you've got all of, and like, you know, some dark stuff has really come up and, you know, I mean, been brought to the light in the last few months, but for a while you're in isolation, you're alone with your thoughts. And now you're like going down the rabbit hole and you're reading Reddit, you know, all these different things. And I know that a lot of people, including myself, did struggle with that for a little bit, but yeah, I know.
I stopped reading the news a few months ago. I went, I've had enough. It's not helping me. So I actually stepped away from social media. I was just busy with other things, but it was, like you say, because you've got more time, you're going to spend more time on social media. And then you realize this isn't helping me. In fact, it's just making things worse.
Oh yeah. Like just making you so anxious. I know it's funny because I can probably say 3 times I went down the rabbit hole. Sometimes I like to go on this website called Vigilant Citizen. And
this is going to be good.
Anyways, then I watched The Fall of the Cabal. For anyone who knows what that is. Anyways, and so there was 3 times I went down the rabbit hole. And it's funny because it just totally drives your, like, you know, stress hormones through the roof. Now you're like, I gotta publicly say something emotional and irrational, and I'm gonna look like an idiot and probably delete this tomorrow, which did not happen to me at all. But yeah, it's like, I think it's also super important. We have to be really careful about what we put into our minds because it does affect the way we view the world.
The simple thing is to choose what you don't want to, what you don't want to read. And that's the crazy thing as well about social media is that when you think about it, you're choosing to absorb that information. You're choosing to interpret it. It's not like nobody's, I think it was Chris Rock said, I don't know why they call them drug pushers, because nobody ever came and pushed drugs on me. Like, you go look, he said, you know, you go look for drugs. It's the same with social media. You go, you choose to go on. Nobody comes and forces you to watch it. So it's your fault. Mm-hmm. You got to take. And that's actually something else that I meant to say earlier was, I think one of the most important mindsets in all of this and dealing with is never ever assume a victim mentality, because in my opinion, you're doomed if you do. Nobody's coming for you. You got to figure it out yourself, and there's no point in being a victim.
Yeah. And you know, that's why like personal responsibility is so crucial. Like we're living in, we are living in a fragile time where people think that they are, and I guess to one degree, they are finding some power in being seen as a victim. But unfortunately, you know, we're all at one point or another victim to life circumstances. And the way that I have often thought of it is, I don't want to see someone as a victim, because that oppresses you, and I don't want to oppress you. I want to see you succeed in life. I want to see you overcome the challenges and adversity that you face, because there's so, so much like just liberation and being able to overcome something really challenging. And I've been kind of following recently more so because I've noticed this sort of climb in victim mentality and this, you know, kind of cultural change. Like, you can't say anything anymore without, you know, being afraid that there's going to be this backlash. Like, you have to just, we're all walking around on eggshells. And it's like that, I'll use children as an example. If a little kid we were just at the park the other day with our friend's kid, and you know, he's not quite two. I think he's like 1.5, and he's running, and you know, he falls, he gets dirt on his hands, and he kind of looks back, and you just say, "You're okay, you're good." And then he's like, "Oh, I'm good, okay," you know, and wipes the dirt off his hands. But if that little kid falls and you go, "Oh my God," and you coddle them, you know, then you end up with a child who ends up like with anxiety and a lot more fear and not so sure of themselves, where you get this other kid who's like, you know, at 1 year old, so much confidence. And, you know, we're living in a time where people and parents are just like coddling one another and kids, and we're growing up and we don't have the tools or the confidence and their internal resources to face the challenges of life, because life is hard. I've got a friend, she's a high school teacher, and we were talking about this, and I said, you know, what, you know, have you noticed a change over the last few years? And she's like, yeah, you know, we used to have helicopter parents, now they're lawnmower parents. Like, they just bulldoze through any obstacle the child faces. And so now she has friends that are professors at the university. And you have parents trying to call in for their kids saying they're sick, and you know, the kids are just like overwhelmed and can't, and at that point you're supposed to be a young adult and you can't handle the pressures of school, because if all of your problems are solved for you, you're being debilitated. You're being disabled in some way. And so that's why I'm just like, I'm going to push back on this whole victim thing. I don't want to oppress anybody, and I'm not about that. And I think that we need to start talking and being a voice for the other side against that. Because if we're just all so afraid of offending one another, you can't grow. Like, there's no possible way to evolve if you can't be honest and be honest with yourself and like just take responsibility. So
no, I think that's so true. I think, and I often talk to people about, you know, if somebody tells a joke about a particular demographic, it doesn't matter. You can tell the same joke and mean to insult someone, or you can say it in a funny way. Now, if you can't laugh at yourself, mm-hmm. if you can't laugh at somebody telling a joke at your expense, well, you're going to have a very, very uncomfortable life, because the whole world's laughing at it. It's a joke. You mean God, whatever, the higher power is putting lots of things, and it's funny. And you need to have a sense of humor, dark sense of humor, and you need to laugh. And that annoys me, because it annoys me. And I think it was Chris Rock was speaking about, it was Jimmy Kimmel and the blackface thing. And Chris Rock said, he didn't mean to offend me. He didn't offend me. He meant it in a funny way. Brilliant.
Oh, Jimmy Fallon.
Jimmy Fallon.
Yeah.
And I was going, thank God somebody has talked about the intention. Now, you can do that and mean to offend someone. There's different ways. Mm-hmm. But you have to be careful. You really have to be careful. If you choose to be a victim, you have to be careful, because you're going to continue looking to be a victim and look to be offended or triggered by everything. You're never going to get on with life. And that's what you're always going to be. And you're always going to be complaining. You're always going to be looking for that. And it's funny you tell the story about the kid, because I'll never forget. It must be, it's almost 20 years ago. I remember I was at the beach with someone, and there was their sister was there, and they had a very young kid and the waves were coming in. So they were splashing, and the waves came in, knocked the kid over, fell down, and it looked up for that split second. Mm-hmm. And it was looking at its mother for the reaction. And before the child could do anything, look for attention, she burst out laughing on purpose at the kid. Like she didn't find it funny, but she burst out laughing. And the kid thought, that's what I got to do, start to laugh. That's how it got attention. But there was a moment there that, like you said, if she had ran and, oh, you okay? And mm-hmm. there would have been tears. And I thought, what a wonderful way to condition response in people. And that's where victimhood, listen, the world is tough. Bad things are going to happen. But you choose whether or not you want to be a victim or not. And there are some terrible things happen to people that are not their fault. But you still have that choice how you want to be portrayed, or how you want to portray yourself. And how you portray yourself is how you're going to be treated by other people.
Yeah. And, you know, I have to say, like, part of being, and it's not always the case, like, there are definitely things that happen where you ended up in a situation and you were the victim of something and it was awful, but it's not staying there. And I think that that's like a really important part to remember. And it also depends on the circumstance. It depends on, okay, we'll use, I'll use domestic violence as an example, because I have been a victim of domestic violence. And, you know, it was for such a long time, I viewed this person as this villain. I was so angry. I was so hurt. And I was confused. It's a very complex thing to have to go through. But as soon as I was able to say, no, 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 no. Like, people do all sorts of things, and it doesn't make it okay. But what was it in me? What was it in me that made me feel like I deserved that?
Yes.
What was it in me that made me think that it was okay to stay after this person broke my nose? What was it in me that thought it was, you know, was even attracted to that kind of, you know, controlling partner? And it came from a place of not being certain enough of myself, not believing in my self-worth or even having any self-worth. And then you take it a step further and you start examining other patterns, okay? Because it didn't just start there. Where did it start? Where did it originate? And like, that's kind of like, that for me gave me a sense of power where it's like, how do you avoid this kind of stuff? You know, this is not, this comes back to teaching our children, because you have to teach from a young age. And it's not just teaching us how to treat one another and respect one another, but being an example of, you know, self-love, self-worth. Like, you have to demonstrate that kind of stuff. And so it's interesting because, like, you know, you can go through something like that and you can, and I know for a lot of people, it's so difficult and you can get really stuck there. And I was for a very long time. But as soon as I was able to just stop being so like, you know, I'm the, you know, poor me, he was a bad guy and all this kind of stuff. And I was like, you know, like, what happened to that person? What happened? Like, where's my compassion for him? And like, where did I go wrong? Where was my part to play? And have some compassion for the path that that person had to walk to get them to that point in their life, and to have some, you know, empathy, walk away, keep my distance, but have some empathy for the fact that, and some compassion for the fact that we are all struggling to one degree or another. And if you hurt someone to that degree, you've been, you know, very wounded yourself, and you're probably still, you know, like, hurt people, the saying goes. So yeah, I definitely think that people need to step outside of that victim mentality and look for the patterns. And that's something that I really liked in your book, to bring it back to that again, is, you know, just how you had like a part here, I'm going to scroll down because I had written it down here. About people developing like a positive identity and like values and beliefs. How do you teach that to people?
Well, just to go back to that story, because, and I'm glad you spoke about it, because it, you know, me speaking about it is not the same. And I think when I speak to people about it, I try and get them to think about it in terms of fault and responsibility. Like, it's nobody's fault, or it's not your fault, but it is your responsibility to overcome it. So by asking yourself, like, why did I feel like that? Which is very natural. We all do. But you have a responsibility to yourself then to find a way to move forward. And you described it really, really important. When it comes to beliefs and values, for me, this came about working with teams. And, you know, I ended up working in teams who had people from all different types of backgrounds, and all different beliefs, like whether it was religious beliefs or whatever. And how do you bring them together to work towards a joint goal? And I started to realize, okay, we all have different belief systems. And that in itself, it takes a long time to change that, because it comes from maybe faith, life experience, your family, and they're really strongly ingrained. But we all have values. Like, every faith, for example, if you take a religion, every faith has values that are important. Those are the things you can join on. And so even in a relationship, just to simplify it, between two people, you have people with different belief systems, but if they share values, that's what very strong relationships are based on. And I often describe it that you might go on two different dates, and one person does something, some idiosyncrasy that one of them, it bugs you, the other it doesn't. The person who doesn't, you're connected on a deeper level, and you don't even notice that because you're connected on values. The other person, it just doesn't fit well, or there's something that's not quite the same, but you notice their small habits, and that's what you latch onto, and you go, that's why it didn't work out. But very often it's on that deeper level. Like, what are the values that you share? And that's where very, very strong relationships and teams can be built, because you know what the other person, and that's also the difference between understanding someone and knowing someone. And often in relationships with people, either professional or personal, we don't take time to absorb them and to develop our intuition. Like, that's the difference between knowing. And so, in other words, you come back home, the other person doesn't say anything, and already you know that something's wrong, or that you've screwed up, or that you did something wrong previously, and you know it without them saying anything. That's the difference. And that's developing intuition, which takes time rather than just focusing on the material things. Intuition takes time. It's based, this is the difference between instinct and intuition. Intuition is based on emotion, picking up on other people's emotional clues. And that takes depth. That's why women are better at it than men.
Well, we're naturally the caretakers. And you had also said about, you know, people not just, you know, flocking together that have, you know, similar values, but also people who have similar vices that on the other sort of end of the spectrum, you know, like.
Yes. Yes. So you have, so values, values will lead to either virtues or vices. So that can lead to virtue. So you can be virtuous. In other words, you've got good, positive habits and express yourself in a positive way. Or like you said, if you have lower self-esteem or you don't, if that continues and manifests itself, then you will look for other ways to express yourself, which can end up being vices, which are detrimental to you, which are dangerous to you, which you know, you look to either act out or look for attention. And so you find, for example, there are people who develop, so we have two fundamental drives as organisms. Like if you take a look at it in that sense, every single even cell in your body, its primary goal is to survive. So you do whatever it takes to survive. And at a young age, that's what we develop skills to survive. So if you're the youngest in the family, very often you want attention. So you develop skills, whether it's acting out, looking for attention. Now, as you grow as a whole person, sometimes that leads you towards developing great communication skills and you can be very expressive. But if you don't, if you're not perhaps in a positive environment, you develop other poor habits that can lead you in another direction to look for attention, which is not fulfilling, not making you whole or not developing you. So you look for ways that can be perhaps damaging or poor ways to look for attention.
Mm. Yeah. So actually, you had written about the three different kinds or types of people. I kind of want to talk about that actually, because I think that that would be really helpful, and it's a good way of looking at it. I like to think of myself as a sheepdog, of course.
Yeah, so and that's not even my so. So I did a TED talk. I think it's 2 years ago now. So I'd screwed up. I'd ended up in a really interesting situation where I was isolated. I didn't know what was going on. And again, rather than reach out for help, when I finally did, I was trying to solve problems on my own, and the people who were closest to me, I was mistakenly trying to protect. So I wasn't being open and vulnerable. I was trying to protect them by not sharing, because I was the person who people would come to for help. Ended up drinking to fall asleep that night. And I get up the next morning, I gotta go for help. So I drive to my girlfriend's house for help. Crash. I was very drunk. Got a DUI. And so I did a TED talk 2 years ago about that. But there's a guy, Lieutenant Grossman, who had written about in military about wolves and sheepdogs. And it's a really simple model. And obviously the world is a lot more complex than that. But you've got sheep, sheepdogs, and wolves. And the sheep in your life are the people who, young people, very often young people or older people, or people who are struggling for a moment and they need help and they need support. We all at different phases in our life need that. And then you've got sheepdogs, people who you can trust, lean on, and who will support you, again, for short periods. Otherwise, you end up in a codependent relationship. And then you've got wolves. You've got narcissists, sociopaths, bad people. There are bad people out there. Mm-hmm. And sometimes sheepdogs need other sheepdogs. Sometimes you need to lean on other people. And I learned that the hard way, being around high performers and all kinds of people who are constantly overachieving, sometimes a good lesson to learn. And it was probably, again, I spoke about Jim Stockdale in the book, like you can choose, no matter how difficult the situation is, you can choose to find the lesson, the positive lesson in it. For me, it was a lesson I had to learn. I had to learn that I'm not bulletproof. I can't drive in fifth gear all the time. And there are times when I need to pick up the phone or go and talk to someone to get through difficult moments. And it was a really, really important lesson for me to learn. You think you know it all when you get to your 40s, but obviously not. Obviously, there are more things that you got to keep learning. But there are sheep wolves and sheep dogs.
Well, I think it's good to never feel like you know everything. Stay humble. That's like for sure. And those moments are definitely humbling because you realize, okay, like, oh, how am I going to honor this mistake? Because I messed up and now I got to face the repercussions and the consequences of that. So how did you overcome that difficult time? Because I imagine that would have been, especially with you were working at the time at the University.
I was at the University of Michigan. Yeah. And the first thing was very quickly, I decided I wasn't going to be a victim. That's not really just in my makeup anyway. Mm-hmm. And whatever was going to happen, I was going to accept it. You know, I was going to, the very first thing I did actually was call and resign because just out of honor, that was the important thing for me. But it was, the other thing for me was, I'm not going to be a victim. I'm also going to figure out why it happened. Like, why did I let myself get into that position? And I had to sit down and spent a lot of time thinking, okay, why did you screw up? Like, why did you let this happen to yourself? Now, it's not whether it's your fault or not. It doesn't really matter. It happened. And you have control over that. And I had to learn that when things get difficult, sometimes you got to look for help. Mm-hmm. And I was really fortunate. I had some really good people who were, I didn't realize how much they wanted to help. Now, at the same time, I was also equally surprised by people who just disappeared, which everybody finds out. And it was interesting. I was talking to somebody recently who was in a completely different situation to me, but they were talking about how they were surprised at when, they were struggling with something, other people just disappeared or weren't there. But I had some really, really good people who helped to talk me through and who shared difficult moments that they had been through and how they had overcome it. And that was really important. I think the other thing is that when something like this happens, you are on your own. You've got to figure it out. Now, you can look for help. You can lean on people from time to time. But if you truly want to get over it and ensure it doesn't happen again, you got to figure it out yourself. There's nobody coming to with a book or with a, with a blueprint. You got to figure this out for yourself, and you have to look at your strengths and your weaknesses. And one of the things that I think is really important, something I spend a lot of time now, particularly in the corporate world, with, is helping people recognize how their strengths, if they become what I call super strengths, they actually become weaknesses. So I was working with someone recently who was a brilliant communicator, wonderful communicator, but at times they communicate so much that they don't actually, they aren't aware of the people, their staff, of their concerns. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes the skill that you have that has gotten you to a particular point, you need to be careful that it doesn't become, in my case, it was the ability to tolerate, do more work than others, that in over time just became overwhelming for me. And I had to learn to manage that and be careful that I didn't take on too much. And so, I learned so much from it. It was, nobody wants to go through something like that, but probably learned more from that than at any other period in my life. And you can choose, again, that was the other thing, you can choose to either learn from it or run from it. It's up to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And definitely the hardest moments, obviously they suck when you're going through them, but those are definitely the times when we are growing the most, or sorry, we have the potential to grow the most and learn the most. Or you can let it, you know, stunt you and stunt your growth, and you can stay stuck there and let it define you. But something that you had said in your TED talk actually was that the wolf is present, or it's represented like as a tragedy or trauma, and it'll visit every one of us at some point in our lives. And like, I think you were relating it to that experience for you, how we at some point or another, you know, go through something like that.
It happens to every, like, I've yet to meet somebody who hasn't gone through a difficult moment and said, you know, and it, you would be amazed at people who, some really successful people who have shared things with me that I didn't know about. Like, I mean, this one guy telling me about, you know, spending time in jail. It was a, like, I mean, things were far worse than mine. And I realized, and these were really successful people who nobody knows some of these stories about. And I was going, wow, I did not know that. Somebody else, I remember in time he had screwed up and his wife, like, I mean, was about to leave him. And I was, they had like the most amazing marriage externally. And again, that's the difference between an image and an identity and how you choose to learn from it. And I was really impressed with how others had overcome their challenges. And some of them were mistakes on their part, as mine was, or some of them were, you know, not their fault and tragedies that they had to deal with. But it's going to visit everybody. The worst thing, in my opinion, is if you make the same mistake again, that you haven't ran to the gunfire, like you haven't really ran and figured out, ran to it. And it's uncomfortable. But when you come through that and you know, to use your analogy, you've added more tools to your toolbox. Mm-hmm. And there are two things. You're either going to, they're either controllable or uncontrollable. So that if they're controllable, you come up with strategies to manage it. If they're uncontrollable, you accept it and you just avoid those situations. So for example, it might be people who you spend time with. Well, you can choose not to be in that group, and that can, or like if you're in a relationship where it starts to repeat itself, that's your choice. Mm-hmm. You can choose. And you have to, in my opinion, again, my experience, you have to run to it, figure it out. Sometimes you need help to do that, but you have to do that if you want to get over it. Otherwise, you're just going to repeat the same mistake, and nothing annoys me more with people seeing them make the same mistake time and time again.
Yeah. And being able to decipher what's, you know, you're saying it's like the, in, you know, your inner world, you have the choice to respond and to, in a sense, regain some, and maybe you are out of control, but maybe like learning to regain some control over your internal world. But then, yeah, accepting the things that are out there, like, you know, like a car accident that wasn't your fault, or a, you know, some illness or a loss of a loved one, or, you know, disease, pandemic, whatever. Those are so many things that are outside of your control. So really focusing on what are the things you can control in your life. And as you say, very few things are actually within your control.
Well, that's the other thing. Like when you work, you know, this was one of the assumptions or mistakes I was making, was that when you work with high performers or you've been successful or accomplished, you start to create this perception or this belief that you're in control because you're successful, you achieve things. So you start to believe, okay, I'm in control of things. The reality is you're just really well prepared. And that's why you're successful or get, you know, often more successful. But in reality, you're never actually in control. You're just really well prepared and really, you know, you're talented in a particular area, and that's why you become successful. The reality is you're never in control. You don't control other people. You don't control the environment. And so that's one of the things I think that we often make mistakes. And when you recognize that, then life becomes a lot easier. Life becomes an awful lot easier.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Why do you think it's so difficult for people to change?
I heard this saying, you know, get comfortable being uncomfortable, a long time ago. And I just adopted it. Like I love change because for me it's learning, and again it can be a disadvantage, but for me I love learning new things. I think people become fixed, and I it's something I should have spending some time researching. I truly believe that we have, again, like a desire for security, and routine and habit reinforce that, and it gives us a sense of comfort. So we like to be able to predict the future to some degree, and because it gives us a sense of comfort and we can relax and we can be comfortable. But that, again, you're not in control. Like, I mean, take the environment. You don't know what's going to happen. It could be an earthquake, fire, whatever. But having routine and habit allows us to predict the future, then we can switch off, you know, so-called, and we can relax. And I think that's where this fear of change and fear, and we don't associate change with learning. For me, every time there's been some change in my life, it's led to exciting new developments. And when you reflect on it, you go, you know what, change is a good thing. And so when something happens, it's out of my control or whatever, it doesn't faze me as much anymore as it would have done a long time ago when I was much younger, because to me it's just going to lead to something. And I you'd laugh. Like, I mean, I actually purposely try and keep my life simple. Like, I mean, I don't try and get attached to material things. I'm far more interested in people, because and I often ask people, you know, if there's a fire coming to your house, like, what would you grab, like, and how few things would you grab to go? I think it's a really interesting thing, because people get really attached to material things, whether it's living in a particular area or that. But you can, it's really exciting. Change is where you learn the most.
Yeah, so not being immobilized by the fear, because the uncertainty and the unknown is definitely, you know, can be scary. But yeah, some of the best things I've ever done have been from pushing past my fear and just going for it anyway. So I know you got to get going here soon. So I just wanted to, you know, I wanted to ask you a couple more questions before I let you go. That's okay. We've had a good one here today. Been really enjoying chatting with you as well. So I'm like, the same time, just picking your brain.
No, questions are good.
So yeah, I guess to kind of come back around here, for just to tie this up with people that are maybe, you know, struggling with some fear, some self-doubt, would you, because I know you were saying about the importance of role models, and obviously that's really important in, you know, in our younger years or in childhood for sure. But what do you think about people being able to pick role models, and what you sort of focus your attention on, how important that can be in helping you to move forward and move past some of your fears and learning from what other people are doing?
I think role models are critical. And I think that we today, because of the way that media portrays them as being perfect, I think that's the worst thing. I think, like I said, when you were growing up, you had role models in your neighborhood. Like, it might have been somebody in business or whatever, but you knew that they were flawed because, you know, gossip in the house, whatever. But now, almost all of our role models are media based, thousands of miles away, and you don't get to see the argument between Kim and Kanye. You don't get to see whoever your role model is. Mm-hmm. I think in the book, I think I told the story about how, you know, imagine you're on a yacht with Oprah, The Rock, you know, Ellen, whatever, all of these famous people who are role models. And, you know, after dinner, tables cleared. And through dinner, they're all telling you about the latest house they bought, next movie they're working on, next big project. And you're just in awe of them. And at the end of dinner, though, when tables cleared, the waiter comes and hands everybody a piece of paper and tells everybody to write down their greatest fear, the thing they're struggling with, crumple up the piece of paper and throw it into the middle of the table. Now you can swap with anyone at the table. You can take their fame and their wealth. You can have their, you can live their life. But before you do that, you have to pick up that piece of paper and take their problems and struggles, their personal trials with you. when you would do that, when you would open up their piece of paper and see what other people have privately to deal with, you would realize, you know, how flawed and how they struggle just like everybody else. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes that's really important to remind ourselves that nobody's perfect, nobody has the perfect life. But role models are important because you can learn from the good things that they do. But just remember that nobody's perfect. Nobody has a perfect life.
Mm, that's true. Being perfectly imperfect.
Perfectly imperfect, yes. And it gives you such freedom as well when you recognize that. And, you know, I think that's really important, is to have that freedom to know, like you said, you don't have to live up to being perfect. You just have to live the best life that you want to live and decide what that is.
And at the same time, maybe put a little bit less importance on the opinions of like everybody thinking you're perfect online and,
yes.
and trying to live an image, and maybe focusing more on the opinions that actually do matter.
Exactly. And those are your sheepdogs.
Yes, your circle.
Your circle,
and,
yes.
And as we have also come full circle. So where can people find you, Fergus?
FergusComedy.com, Twitter, Instagram. I'm working on another book actually at the minute around those skills. Not a guru or anything. I just, like with the Happiness Handbook, it was just about sharing my perspectives. And again, I don't think they're perfect. It's my perspective and the way that I try and keep, like we were talking about, keep building that little tool belt that allows you to just get through life a little bit easier. I just enjoy writing and sharing thoughts, just like you.
Yeah, well, I definitely enjoyed reading your book, and I was so excited. It was like, it has my name in it. Like, simple pleasures.
Exactly, well, the small things in life.
Exactly. Well, I've had a great time chatting with you today, and you can come back anytime.
Shadi, thank you so much. Really enjoyed it.
Have a good one. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Shanti Ma Podcast. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you did, please remember to subscribe. Until next time, bye.